everybody. This is Chris.
And Kathy.
We wanted to take a minute to thank you all for tuning in. We appreciate every listener and are grateful for this platform.
Please help us share our vision by subscribing to our show through your favorite streaming app. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at Petability Podcast.
Check out our ever-growing list of affiliates and sponsors. Simply go to the show notes for information and links.
And be sure to use our promo code PETPOD22, that's PETPOD22, on checkout to receive your discount from our affiliates. And now here's a word from our sponsor.
Hi, I'm Alon Landa, CEO of MedcoVet, and I'm a proud sponsor of Petability. We decided to partner with Chris and Kathy because, like them, we want to empower all pet owners who are trying to do the most for their pets. At MedcoVet, we specialize in advanced home laser therapy for pets. Laser therapy is a safe and effective treatment for common conditions like arthritis and wounds, and it relieves pain for most conditions caused by inflammation. With MedcoVet, pet owners can perform this treatment at home while receiving support from experienced clinicians. If you think your pet would benefit from healing at home, visit MedcoVet.com, and one of our clinical experts will work with you to determine if home laser therapy is the right fit for you and your pet. Tell them Petability sent you.
Typical rescues are well equipped to handle tripods, blind, and deaf. But when we tip into the realm of what people would consider more severe disabilities, things like acute spinal injuries, if there are dogs in need there, that is where we try to step in first and foremost.
Welcome to Petability. I'm your host, Kathy Simon, certified veterinary technician and certified canine rehabilitation practitioner.
And I'm your host, Chris Cranston, licensed physical therapist and small animal physical rehabilitationist.
Our podcast provides interviews and information to help your pets live their best lives.
Good morning, Kathy. What's going on today?
Good morning, Chris. How are you today?
I'm well, very well.
I am too. We have another great guest today. We only get great guests on this show. I think
that's true. I like to say that they're properly vetted. Get it?
Yes, exactly.
Ha ha ha.
Good one. Yeah. We have a great guest today, Chris, whose mission is near and dear to my heart and yours as well, I know. Today we're going to be speaking with Christina Powell, the compassionate force behind the Special Needs Animal Rescue League. And I'm so excited to speak with Christina today because we all share the same passion to advocate for animals with either physical impairments or maybe who are medically complex. And we've been advocates for physically impaired dogs and cats, as well as, you know, sensory impaired. And I think the more we talk about pets with disabilities, the more we normalize the dog with three legs or the dog in the wheelchair or the cat with cerebellar hypoplasia. You know, and for me, there's nothing better than seeing those animals succeed and be integrated into a loving family. I have this little patient. I think you've met him, Chris, this little Havanese that was referred to me many years ago, young dog with hind limb deformities. And when I looked at his medical records and his notes and his x-rays, you know, prior to meeting him, I thought, I'm going to meet a pretty profoundly disabled dog. And that's what I had prepared myself for. And that's not at all what happened. You know, sure, he has unusual anatomy. Yes. And his way of ambulating is not like a regular dog, but he was doing it. You know, he had figured out how to use his body. And I was struck with how resilient and resourceful he is. And I think that's one of the most remarkable aspects of animals with disabilities is their ability to thrive despite adversity. You know, and thank goodness this organization, Halo Havanese Rescue, was able to take this little dog in and they recognized that his life has value. And now he is been living with this amazing family who loves him tremendously. And he's just the greatest. He's never once complained about the body that he's been given. He just carries on.
I agree that I'm really stoked to have this organization whose acronym is SNARL, which I think is very creative, S-N-A-R-L. And, you know, I never really thought about special rescues that focus on pets with special needs, you know, whether it's major medical or physical, as you described, or sensory. You know, you've definitely been an advocate for the blind dog, having had two yourself, and, you know, deaf dogs are awesome. I mean, they, like you said, they just adapt and do so well. But I remember my first exposure where I really thought about it was with Panda Paws Rescue on Animal Planet. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners may be familiar with that, because that was great to see how an organization like Snarl works, you know, having seen Panda Paws with Amanda Geis on Animal Planet. And so, you know, we really, really want to get into the details of how this all works, you know, where they get these animals, you know, it's a complex organization in terms of networking and so forth. So I can't wait to get into it.
Yeah. So let me give you a little bit of background on Christina and Special Needs Animal Rescue League before we jump right in. Special Needs Animal Rescue League's mission is to provide a haven for animals with disabilities to receive vetting, rehabilitation, and foster care while finding their perfect forever homes. They say yes to those who have been overlooked and placed in high-risk situations due to their special needs. As the founder and driving spirit of Special Needs Animal Rescue League, Christina has a deep-seated passion for advocating on behalf of those who cannot speak for themselves. Her unwavering dedication transformed the lives of countless animals in need. At Special Needs Animal Rescue League, every life is valued and every animal finds hope, care, and a chance for a brighter future. Their mission extends beyond rescue. They are advocates for change, striving to raise awareness about the challenges faced by special needs animals and promoting a culture of inclusivity within the animal welfare community. Christina's tireless efforts have made Special Needs Animal Rescue League a safe haven for animals in need, but also a beacon of advocacy and education, fostering a culture of understanding and acceptance. So please welcome Christina Powell to the show.
Welcome, Christina.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to chat about, you know, dogs with disabilities and how that has played into the rescue world through Snarl.
And you're in Canada. I just caught the boat.
I am.
I think Christina is also associated with our friend Lori Edge Hughes, which is exciting. So it's exciting to make connections like that.
Yeah, it's, we love Lori.
The rescue world is very small. So we actually utilize the Canine Fitness Center here in Calgary, of course, where Lori works and is so well known for all of our hydrotherapy and those types of needs within the city.
She's wonderful. Yeah.
So Christina, getting right into it, what inspired the creation of Snarl? And what is your mission as described in your words?
So I have always been involved in the human side of the disability world. I coached Special Olympics for 11 years, and it dates all the way back to the ninth grade, where I was, you know, 14 years old, and my mom took me to work for Take Your Kids to Work Day, and she plunked me in a classroom with kids with autism. And I absolutely fell in love with just working with the disabled population. And so translated forward, that turned into a Bachelor of Medicine in Community Rehabilitation and Disability Studies. And then I went on to pursue my Master's of Physical Therapy afterwards. During that time, I love animals. I have always been an animal advocate. I was fostering with some local rescues here in Calgary at the time. And then my passions kind of all just came to a head. And it was through falling in love with a dog on TikTok. You know, it was early in the morning. I was scrolling and I saw this wobbly German Shepherd come across my feed. And she was located in the Central Valley of California from a high kill shelter. She needed a home. And I ended up bringing her back up here to Canada, adopting her, and then wanted to know how to save more dogs like her. And that's kind of where Snarl started. There was a dog out of New Mexico, again, a wobbly pit bull. And somebody who followed me on social media reached out and said, Christina, I know that you just brought one up. Would you be interested in helping this dog? Is there anything you can do? And I said, yeah, absolutely. Little do you know, Sam, you're going to become Snarl's co-founder and you're never leaving. And so that's how Sam and I got involved together. We rescued this dog from New Mexico together. Her name was Pippa, and we needed a driver. We needed a transporter. And so we put out the call to social media on our pages and we said, you know, we're going to do this rescue. We're just starting. And Sarah, our third co-founder, put her hand up and just said, hey, I would love to help with the driving. I'm in Denver. And there was born our three hubs of the Calgary chapter, the London chapter, and the Denver chapter of Snarl Rescue.
Isn't it amazing, Christina, how that one special animal, that one special dog inspired this whole movement? And I can't tell you how many times we interview people where they're like, it was because of this dog or this cat that inspired so much. And now you're saving so many lives.
It's incredible. And I mean, I talk about it all the time, where it was really three people who were just willing to say yes and just try. And I think that that is so true for a lot of the special needs rescue world, especially, is just, you don't have to have all of the answers right away, and you don't have to know everything right away. But if you're open to learning, there is so much possibility and so much education available to make things like this happen.
What types of animals do you take into Snarl? Is it primarily dogs with physical impairments? Do you take cats with impairments?
So we take in both dogs and cats. We try to focus on the animals that don't have another rescue coming for them. So high kill shelters, where we've watched kind of the red list, and there's nobody local stepping up for them. So more often, typical rescues are well equipped to handle tripods, blind and deaf. But when we tip into the realm of what people would consider more severe disabilities, things like acute spinal injuries, some of the IVDD cases, things like that, the neurological cases that are not yet diagnosed, if there are dogs in need there, that is where we try to step in first and foremost. We also do take a mix of breeder surrenders, owner surrenders. It really depends on where there's an animal in need. And a proportion of our animals do come locally as well from the Alberta area, where there's just an overflow in our shelters and rescues right now. Especially on the First Nations reserves, we're able to help out with some of those dogs and keep them out of the cold. So it's really what I like to call our trail mix bag of how we get our animals into care, but that's kind of the core of our focus.
Can you tell our audience what the red list is, what that means?
Yeah, so the red list is a name for every kill shelter, which are typically in overpopulated areas where they're just not able to house all of the homeless animals that are coming in. They will have what's called a red list, and that is effectively the euthanasia list. So animals with disabilities find themselves on that red list more often than not, and typically quicker than able-bodied dogs. Some of that is cost to the rescue. Some of that is because they're seen as unadoptable, and a lot of the advocacy that we do is surrounding challenging that notion of unadoptability, or care needs. And so we are very well networked throughout Canada and the US with kind of these red lists that are available publicly to be able to just see who is in need.
I guess I want to find out, you know, once they come into Snarl, what's the process of, rehabilitation, finding that special home or finding that owner that understands things like IVDD or wheelchair care or the needs of an animal that needs to have their bladder expressed?
Yeah, absolutely. So when they come into Snarl, I mean, one of the things that we talk about is that it's very similar to a traditional rescue, in that animal goes through the decompression phase. They get to go for their first walk, whether that be on four legs, whether that be on three legs or two legs and two wheels. It really just depends on the dog. Mm-hmm. But they experience all of those similar things that every other dog in rescue care does. So let's say that we have a dog with a spinal cord injury. That dog might be assessed for a rehab intensive with me. They may have had surgery. They may be well accustomed to their wheels and just ready to go rip around at the dog park. It really, really depends. So all of our dogs are fully vetted, and that can be traditional vetting, like what you would consider your spay, your neuter, your vaccines, your microchip, or some of the more specialty vetting that we offer at Snarl. And that's more of like the neurology consults, MRIs if they're needed, orthopedic consults for bone related issues. We're able to kind of offer that whole picture for these dogs. So every dog comes in through one of our three co-founders, so myself, Sam, or Sarah, to be assessed both medically and behaviorally. And then they go out to what we would call one of our auxiliary foster members. So we have incredible foster homes in all three of our hubs and beyond. And those are kind of where our long-term placements tend to go. So they hang out in a foster home for as long as needed until their perfect forever home comes along after they've been medically cleared. And we have been so, so grateful lately to have had great success adopting out our pups. We had two little puppies go up for adoption last week, and effectively we had over 80 applicants for them. And so it's been a real success with people getting involved in the mission and seeing the value in these dogs, and just wanting to open up their own home to take one in. And I think that's a really kind of great way to show success for us as well.
That was one of my questions, Christina, is, you know, do you find that there's just a ready-made population of adopters that want animals with special needs, or do you have to really seek and, you know, look in unique places to address that potential challenge?
You know, I think that there's both. And I think that there's the good and the bad in both as well. And it's a really kind of interesting world to be in with special needs animals, because when we see somebody who is really gung-ho about, I want a disabled animal, we always ask why. Tell me why, right? Like, fill me, where is your passion? Have you had some experience in the area? Do you have familial connection? Often we find that our adoptive homes, they may have had a family member or a loved one that across their lifespan who has had a disability, and now they're open to taking in a disabled dog, or they fell in love with a dog on social media who they saw was disabled and went, hey, I can do this too. We also see the other flip side of that in this area of rescue, and I think it's important to talk about, that is almost the savior mentality side. And that's something that we talk about a lot at Snarl, and just go, hey, there's a lot of implicit almost bias in looking into yourself and reflecting on, why do I want a disabled animal? And, you know, is it for the right reasons? And just asking those questions to yourself when you're thinking about adopting one. And then there's the other side of, you know, people who maybe never would have considered adopting a disabled dog. And then now they're open to it. And that is the most beautiful part, I think, of this type of rescue, is realizing the, oh, I can do it, or it's not that hard. And we last week just did a whole series on our Instagram about bladder expression, where I filmed a video of doing one of our foster dogs, Tofu's bladder, and just said, was it what you thought it was? And we had dozens of feedback saying, oh, that's so much easier, or I always wondered about this, and just, you know, haven't asked. And I think there is nothing scarier than the unknown when it comes to working with these pups.
And I think that what people will find when they adopt an animal with special needs is, once they find their normal, they can pretty much do anything. Once they figure out what their good balance is, what their normal is. And I think that the other thing that maybe they don't realize that's happening is that they're showing the world that their dog in a wheelchair who needs their bladder expressed is still going for walks and still doing things that bring them joy. So I think once they find their balance, I think it becomes their normal.
I totally agree, Kathy. I think it's just a new normal. And, you know, we tell people it's expression instead of letting them outside, or it's popping them in their wheels instead of putting their harness on. And it's just, it's same, same, but different. And one of the things I know when I take my disabled dog, Ryder, who is a German Shepherd who was shot in the spine, she's paralyzed and uses a wheelchair, is, you know, I always say, she's paralyzed, not slow. She does everything and she keeps up, and people are like, oh, she's able to run. And it's like, yes, she is. She does all of the things, you know, that a typical dog does. She might just look a little bit different doing them.
And she's paralyzed, but she's still a dog, right? She still wants to do dog stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, first and foremost, dogs are dogs, and they have such a resilient drive. And you kind of mentioned that right at the beginning, that dogs want to go. Dogs want to do, dogs want to play, dogs want to, you know what I mean? They just want to adventure. And I think that they do so much because of it. And I've never seen a dog sit there and wallow in their disability, right? They're always getting so creative on how they can move their bodies and make these adaptations themselves. And I think we have a lot to learn by just following their lead as well.
I agree with that. And, you know, I told the story many years ago on another show about my very first patient that I assisted in an amputation with. And I was really sad for them and thinking, how are they going to manage this dog? She's a big lab and she's crazy. And now she's only going to have three legs. How's she going to go to the bathroom? How's she going to do this? You know, how's she going to do that? And when I saw her for her suture removal, she came in and knocked me on my butt. Like, she jumped me and just like hit me square in the chest and knocked me down. And I was like, she's going to be fine. And her life was so much better without that leg. It was a total burden. And she lived the rest of her life three-legged with no problems.
You know, Christina, you mentioned earlier, you know, kind of your advocacy with Ryder and this education component. Do you prepare potential adopters for this kind of need to be, you know, to be ready to discuss their dog's disability and so forth? Is that an expectation that they may not be equipped, you know, to know about prior to adoption?
Absolutely, Chris. You know, I think that there is a lot to say about being ready for all of the questions that you might get. And we've done some kind of funny skits and whatnot on TikTok where I'm not sure if you've seen them, but I'll put on my hat and my little, you know, hair is my mustache, acting as somebody at the dog park asking a question.
Love that.
And then I come out as myself and answer. And so I think that's a huge part of it. And I think that that's actually one of the things that people don't always realize about adopting a disabled dog is, even from the curiosity, you're going to get question after question because it's just so unknown to a lot of people. So from a snarl perspective, I mean, we try to prepare our adopters in every way. And that's the hands-on training with things like expression or learning how to put the dog in their wheelchair, virtual wheelchair fitting appointments afterwards if changes need to be made, down to how to decompress your dog, how to provide enrichment to a disabled dog during that first period, and how to use some of that language, fully understanding your dog's condition, what it means, and are you then able to translate that to tell that to somebody else who is asking because they're curious. So absolutely, it's well-rounded. And then we stay on board for the lifetime of the dog. So we're always available for support. We've actually got a alumni network that we have on social media that connects all of our alumni together. And so, yeah, it's ongoing long-term.
Do you find that there's a difference between those pets that have a genetic disability that they're born with versus those that acquired a physical disability due to trauma or something else?
I think that's a big umbrella question. And I think my answer is both yes and no, honestly. There are definitely differences between an acquired disability, right? And the disability that a dog has been born with. I think that the differences for me are often there's an initial healing period in those acquired disabilities, right? If we're talking about injury, whether that be surgery, whether that be, you know, hit by a car or something like IVDD, intervertebral disc disease, and we have a dog who maybe has to be on crate rest. In a lot of our congenital cases or cases where dogs have been born with different conditions, we skip that period. But in terms of the dog coping with the disability, that's where I think the similarities come into. I think dogs can adjust really, really well. And if we especially provide them with the adaptations that they need to adjust to their new baseline, whatever that looks like in terms of their mobility, that's where I think we see the playing field even out. So dogs that have been born with a disability, it's all that they know. And they're thriving. I mean, we see dogs with cerebellar hypoplasia or, you know, wobbly dog syndrome. And it looks like they're dancing. And it's because they're happy and they're prancing around. And then we see dogs with an acquired disability. I just posted a video of Tofu and he's paralyzed. He's a little small terrier that we have. And he's hopping up and down on his two working legs just the same. So I think that we see more similarities and differences between the two groups.
There's nothing better than seeing that spark in the dog's eyes when they realize in the wheelchair that they can move Absolutely. Independently. When they first realize they can do it and they're like, yahoo! So, Christina, can you tell us, how does Snarl collaborate with other animal rescue organizations or shelters in the community?
So we do a ton of collaboration. I am a firm believer that the more of us that they are doing advocacy, doing education, the stronger that we are, because it really takes a village. And that's something that you'll hear me say over and over and over again on the Snarl world. But we collaborate on a number of different levels. So with our vetting partners, we're able to provide consults. And it's funny, I always say my neurologist has me on text now. And so he'll message me about a case that he has, and he has questions about different splints or whatnot. Or if I have questions, we can collaborate and whatnot. We collaborate with all of our local Alberta rescues if they need supports for their dogs. So we have a community giving program to be able to either keep dogs at home that have disabilities and just provide the equipment that they need if we have extra of it, or other rescues that may need splints or wheelchairs or just education on, you know, hey, we have a dog who was hit by a car. They have a broken pelvis. We're looking at crate rest. Any tips? And so that's great because that helps to expand the network of typical rescues that aren't disability centric to be able to support these animals ongoing. So there's a level of that. And then we also have a direct partnership level where Snarl has partnered with Forgiven Animal Sanctuary. And I've brought my rescue partner here, Lee, who is a director and co-founder of Forgiven Animal Sanctuary, to be able to speak a little bit on our partnership. And we've been partners for just over a year now. We just celebrated our first partnerversary. And we've been able to bring several dogs up from this, the Mid-South in the Arkansas area, up across the U.S., up across Canada, and work on cases together to really help save more dogs with disabilities from a greater span across North America.
I'd love to hear Lee expound on Forgiven Animal Sanctuary. Would love to hear more.
Yeah, sure. Well, hello. Thank you guys for having me. So my name is Lee. As you guys just said, I am one of the co-founders at Forgiven Animal Sanctuary. We opened in 2021, and I have been in rescue since 2018, and I have personally been able to work at a city shelter that was unfortunately like a kill shelter, and then at a privately owned no kill shelter. And so when Forgiven was founded, the whole idea was to kind of be a mesh in between those. So our main priority is being like a resource for other rescues. So we only pull from other rescues, and we try to pull some of their harder cases. So we'll pull like behavioral things, lots of medical cases and special needs. We've seen ton of neuro dogs because of that. Our main thing that we don't pull, because we do have a lot of special needs dogs, is we don't really do any type of aggression cases. But yeah, so our main focus is pulling dogs from other rescues to try to like free up kennels for them, for to be able to bring in more dogs, and then allow us to take their harder cases to be able to invest more time and resources into them to get them adoptable.
I think about a lot about these dogs that are neurologic. And I think that might be the one thing that I think people look at and go, oh my God, that's that, I can't do that. So if you look at a dog that's deaf, you don't see the impairment. If you look at a dog that's blind, you don't see the impairment. And I think it's really important to educate people on things like IVDD, degenerative myelopathy, dogs that have spinal cord trauma, dogs that are in wheelchairs. Now, how do we educate people, or how do you guys, Christina or Lee, educate the public about these more visible, you know, impairments?
I think a lot of it is really just making it fun for people and making it accessible for them to ask questions. So one of the things that we do here at Snarl is every time that we put skis on the wheelchairs, we talk about shredding the gnar out in the community, right? So instead of going for a walk, we're shredding the gnar. And I think it just relaxes people to be able to ask questions, because I don't know if they always know how. Right. It's they don't know if they can ask questions, or if they should ask questions, or if it's, you know, politically correct. And so by breaking down that barrier and just really making it comfortable to ask those questions, I think we make a lot of headway. And Lee does some incredible stuff with videos that he.
Oh, I'll say, when we first founded, we didn't necessarily know we were going to go into working with a lot of special needs dogs. Our very first dog that we took into our care was a dog that had something neurological going on and that was going to need an MRI and all of that. We were told he was unadoptable and that he would need sanctuary status and all of that stuff. And come to find out, he has CH. It wasn't this huge major thing that was like life debilitating or anything for him. He was going to have a different looking life, but it was definitely not broken, and not one that wasn't full of quality. So that's kind of what like pushed us into it. And when we got him and we realized how many people were not aware, and even ourselves, like we've learned so much from our dogs that we've pulled, we started going live on TikTok. We do it twice a day, every day except for Sunday. And we just have a different dog. We open it up. We kind of tell people about us. We tell them about the dog. And then we just say, all respectful questions are welcome. Mm-hmm. And it's been great. We've found so many people that are just genuinely interested. And we found that we've been able to just like teach so many people different things that they did not know. And I know CH is one that's like really common anymore. And every time somebody sees a dog wobble, they kind of think, oh, well, that's probably CH, because you're seeing so much of it. But we actually have different dogs. So like we've had dogs that have hypomyelination, and we have a dog that's got NCL4A. And those are different types of neurological things that are going on that we've been able to also let people see. And it's kind of the wiggles that the dogs have, I think, that actually like brings people into being like, oh, they're so cute. You get one of two. You get all that's so cute, or all that poor dog. Right. In both of those situations, my favorite thing to say is like, my dogs are not poor. They're not poor. They're different. They're not broken. They don't want pity. They just want you to give them a chance to show you that they're a typical dog. They just, you know, they got a little extra wiggle.
And I want to mention too that, you know, with a lot of these neurological diseases and or traumas, the outcome can look similar, And I think an accurate diagnosis is so important because, again, then you know that potentially this dog is not in pain. This is a static condition that's not going to get any worse and so forth. I think, you know, again, a lot of times people that don't know better, you know, or haven't been privy to this education, just assume that this is a grave diagnosis and, you know, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And oh, again, the poor dog, because it must be in pain if it's ambulating that way, walking that way. And you know, that's not true. Lee, I wanted to just say a couple things. One, Forgiven Animal Sanctuary is FURGIVEN, which again is very creative. And you want to mention your TikTok handle now?
It is Forgiven Sanctuary. So FURGIVEN Sanctuary.
Awesome. And we'll put all of this information in our show notes per usual.
Christina, can you talk a little bit about the role of physical therapy? I'm going to say physical therapy because you're a physical therapist. The role of physical therapy in this adoption world. Are you able to take in some of these cases and use your rehabilitation skills to get these dogs ready for home? Or do you educate owners on how to do rehabilitation? So some simple things for some of these patients, you know, passive range of motion, some massage stuff, things like that.
Absolutely. I mean, physical therapy is really at the core of what we do. And I think that I wouldn't know how to do it otherwise. And I think that's just the physical therapy brain. You know, it's the same as you walk around the mall and you notice yourself noticing people's gait as you walk. You just don't know how to turn it off as a PT. And so it really is at the core of everything that we do. And there's a few different pillars that we look at it. One of those being prehab is big. And that's something that people don't always realize until we talk about it. And those are the dogs that are coming in who we are anticipating amputation for. We're anticipating maybe a spinal related surgery or anything related to that. And we are doing physical therapy ahead of time to really just optimize their fitness, optimize how much strength they have before they're having this procedure so that their recovery there afterwards and the post-hab just goes that much stronger. We've especially seen that with some of our amputation cases, especially in puppies. We've had some German Shepherds that have had amputations that have come through Snarl, and it has been tenfold. And that can be a combination of whether we are doing electrical stim, whether we're doing hydrotherapy, whether we're doing acupuncture, needling, laser treatments prior to surgery, whatever that looks like. Then there is post-op rehab for those dogs. So obviously that starts day one, whether that's either even some of that passive range of motion to make sure that we're not getting secondary impairments after a surgery, or when we have a dog who's going to be on crate rest or you know, X-pen rest for a considerable period of time. And then there's maintenance. And a lot of our dogs who have long-term disabilities just need maintenance care. A lot of that is taught to families. And like you said, that is some of that passive range of motion. A lot of what we do is sensory-based or balance-based. So really having that dog stand on a prickly mat, right? And having that sensation go through their feet, or using an electric toothbrush and just kind of providing some of that sensory input to their rear limbs, especially if they're impacted from a neurological standpoint, as part of their rehab, and teaching families all the multifaceted ways that they can support their animals, or on a more formal basis, linking them with Canine Fitness Center for hydrotherapy going on, or different options that they can do from a more formal PT standpoint once they take their animal home.
You know, we mentioned how adaptable these pets are, and I do think of treating the compensations, as you were alluding to. So if this is a long-term thing, and you know, normally they would be quadruped walking on four legs, and now they're walking on three or even two. We need to make sure that those remaining limbs stay as healthy as possible. So doing things proactively, preventatively to maintain wellness, as you suggested, is paramount, I think, in this type of rescue.
Absolutely it is. And I mean, you know, we have some quite frank discussions on these are the things you can look at with these pups. You are seeing things like muscle atrophy, and that's a very normal part of a lot of these conditions. But here's what we can do to slow that down as much as we can to maintain the range of motion at the joints still, even if we're seeing atrophy in those surrounding muscles, and just how to protect everything else that we can from anything secondary developing.
Can we go back a little bit to your collaboration with Forgiven and Lee's organization? Can you tell us, like, because I know it's complex and I know that the general population is very naive, like the specifics of how you guys work together to transport these animals, how many, you know, you mentioned earlier, it takes a village, you know, how many people are involved in a typical transport, rescue, adoption, you know, that whole process through adoption, please.
Absolutely. I mean, it is such a win-win for both rescues, and we have been able to support one another from Snarl and Forgiven in bringing in animals or transferring animals that maybe wouldn't have had as much success otherwise if there wasn't strength in numbers. And so what that can look like for us, Forgiven has provided Snarl with kennel space down in the Arkansas area at Forgiven Animal Sanctuary. And that has allowed us to bring animals into care that we wouldn't have support for in those areas otherwise, being based in London, Calgary, and Denver. So that has allowed us to expand across the United States into that southeast corner. Then Forgiven is able to provide day-to-day care while we organize transport, because transport is so complex, as you alluded to, Chris. It takes time. There is brokerage crossing the Canadian border we have to get in place, and kind of all of these documents. And so our partnership has allowed for these dogs to be somewhere safe where they're getting vetted, they're getting cared for, they're getting rehab right from day one, while we're able to then bring them up for long-term placement there afterwards. And then Lee, you can speak to some of the other side of kind of the dogs that we've been able to transfer out of that area as well as part of the partnership.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically it's been, you know, we've been able to do like a pretty nice trade of being able to bring in the ones that are in our area and hold them. And then again, as mentioned, I'm in the Mid-South area. In the South, it's kind of wild with as many strays and dogs that need home in the, need homes in the South. So we end up with typical dogs too, that were just maybe shut down in a shelter atmosphere and they were on the red list because they just were not thriving. And so we bring them into our care, and it's kind of surprising. We have an easier time getting out our special needs dogs in our area than we do our atypical dog or like our typical dog. So it's been nice to be able to transfer them up towards Canada or up towards Denver to an area where they're not so saturated with strays. And maybe there are people that are looking for these different types of breeds, and we get them in a home with the help of Snarl.
So I assume that both of you rely on a lot of volunteers to facilitate the transportation. And, you know, you talked about it, that it's all foster based for you, Christina. So how are the volunteers enlisted?
So we do. I always say we like to run a tight ship at the same time. So we take a lot of pride in how strictly we vet all of our volunteers that are associated with Snarl. So our transporter, we are lucky to have a USDA licensed transporter as one of our co-founders. So Sarah, who's based in Denver, does a lot of our transports for us. We also have a number of volunteers through either the formal channels like Pilots for Pets, and all of the organizations that exist to help transfer dogs across Canada and the U.S. that are going through rescues. We have had driving volunteers, and there is an application right on our website at www.snarlrescue.ca that has our foster and transport app right on it for individuals who are personally wanting to get involved. We encourage anybody anywhere in Canada or the U.S. to apply, just because we have dogs that are getting pulled from all over. And so when we get a call that an animal needs help, we will reach out to our transport network or our foster network temporarily in those areas to see if they're able to help us for even kind of, you know, an hour or two or a day or two or whatever that dog's temporary needs are, until we can get them into one of our three hubs. So it really takes a village, and we have actually done some minute by minute videos, I'll call it, or Instagram stories, where we have tracked the, okay, everybody, it is Tuesday at 9:49 a.m. and we just got the call. And everything after that, we track, this is what's been done in the last 5 minutes. This is what's been done in the next 10 minutes. And just all of the work that goes through there, and all of the different bodies that are involved, and people who are making phone calls and organizing supplies for us. So there's a number of volunteer roles that way, where we always encourage people, even if you can't foster and have a dog in your home, well, you may be able to help with driving to go pick a dog up, or, you know, getting supplies ready or things like that. So there's really a role for everyone that way.
Yeah. Or just being the leg of a trip, even. Exactly. Maybe, you know? Yeah.
Well, and I imagine that the financial burden is tremendous. And so even if you can't like you said, volunteer. I'm sure you're always looking for donations and things like that. What is the cost to operate a special needs rescue like this?
It's incredibly expensive, and it's something that we're really transparent about. And we take a lot of pride in the amount of vetting that we do on the rescue end so that families don't have to take that on themselves. And I think that's part of the reason why we see so many successful adoptions on both the SNARL side. And I know it's the same for Forgiven, where they're also doing MRIs and neurology consults. And sometimes that involves driving dogs for hours and hours to get to those specialists down there because they're not quite as readily available. And so from a donation standpoint, I mean, we are entirely crowdfunded. It is entirely our village that is supporting us through direct donations. SNARL is a volunteer run team. So 100% of that money is going right back into the dogs. And so, yeah, it really is corporate donors, individual donors, people donating their time to help us with events and whatnot as a volunteer. It really is the only way that we do it. And in terms of how much does it cost, it's different for every dog. But I mean, we have had dogs who have had $10,000 surgeries, $5,000 MRIs are a standard thing around here. Lots of different kind of amputation surgeries or exploratory diagnostics. And I can just, the list goes on and on, right, of different kind of vetting that we do. Hospitalizations are common on our end too, if we take in acutely ill dogs or critical condition dogs. So yeah, the cost is astronomical. We're always fundraising. I feel like that's the name of the game in rescue, of course, for every nonprofit organization.
Christina, tell our audience about your merch because it's amazing. And that's a way they can help support SNARL, correct?
Thank you. Yes. Merch is one of my favorite things that we do at SNARL. And so we just came out with an All Dogs Rock, Some Dogs Roll t-shirt that has been really popular recently. And it really just speaks to that mission of normalizing disability, right? And showing the similarities rather than focusing on the difference between these dogs. So all of our merch is designed in-house. Typically, I'm sitting right at this desk where I am right now, and I put TikTok on in the side, and we involve our community, and they actually create the designs with us. So they help pick the fonts, the colors, the different kind of images that we're going to use, what they like and what they don't like. And so it's a really collaborative way to connect directly back with our rescue community. And then we push the launches throughout the year. There's different merch launches, and funds from that merch go directly back into our Animals in Care. And then we also do collaborative merch. So we came out with a collaborative merch with Forgiven. And I can kind of tap Lee in on that of what we've done both as a partnership from a SNARL and Forgiven merch. And then Forgiven also has some really wicked merch as well. And they do some stuff a little bit differently than us as well as an organization.
So yeah, we do the same thing. So we design all of our merch, the merch that we sell, because we also have a brick and mortar. So on top of our like vetting bills and all of that stuff, our dogs live here. So we have to keep up with the maintenance of their house too. So our expenses are a little bit different than what SNARL is. So we try to make as much profit as we possibly can. So we make hats and we make sweatshirts and I mean, we make all sorts of stuff though, but it's all made in-house.
Such a simple way to support, you know, get t-shirts, hats, yeah, stickers, such an easy way to support both organizations.
Twofold. You've helped because there's profit coming in and then you're a walking billboard for us. So if somebody sees their name and they say, oh, wow, what is that? And they look it up, you did that for us. So
exactly. That's what I was going to say. Always better to get merchandise. I know we're sounding really cool because we're calling it merch, but some of you out there may not know exactly what we're referring to, but any merchandise. And yes, it's a win-win because we've supported an organization that we definitely love and also get the word out to other folks. So I've often experienced that as I've worn different things for different organizations. So what do you say to people who say, man, you know, you put $20,000 into one dog, you know, they had a $5,000 MRI, a $10,000 surgery, thousands of dollars worth of rehab, plus the other incidentals that just go along with care and adopting. Couldn't you take that $20,000 and save 20,000 dogs?
Yeah, and we hear that a lot. And I think there on the surface is a lot of validity to that. I understand why people are wondering, you know, why are you putting $20,000 into one dog? And in the simplest way possible, I don't have the manpower to save 20,000 dogs. Right. I don't have the ability to do that. What I can do, though, is save one dog really well. One dog whose life matters, one dog who is not less because they're disabled. And I can do a lot of advocacy for other dogs like that as well, so that the rescues that can take in, you know, 20,000 dogs, well, maybe we see some more disabled dogs getting saved by those rescues as well. And so I do a lot of kind of asking questions back, going, why is this dog's life less valuable just because they're disabled? And let's break that down. And quality is the most important over quantity in any area of rescue. And that's really at the core of what we do.
And as you guys said before, when you're pulling from some of these other shelters, you know how there's that saying like rescuing one saves two lives. So the one that you've adopted plus the one that whose space is created in the shelter, you know, so that they can take in another animal. So, you know, you're taking these maybe higher cost special needs pets out of typical shelter and creating space and more monies for that shelter to support others.
Absolutely. Exactly. And you're telling that shelter that when they have a disabled dog, to not just automatically put that dog on the red list, or worse, I mean, euthanize that dog without even trying to seek rescue, because they know that the last time that they had one, a rescue stepped up for that dog. And so I think there's all of the in behind scenes of, you know, you're planting these seeds in people's minds of, oh, there is value in these dog. And oh, I saw that last dog got adopted afterwards. And I think that that's how we start to spark change in the rescue system as a whole in such a positive way. And all it takes is one dog.
So Christina, not only sparking change, but also potentially addressing mental health, I think, of the workers in these shelters. I can only imagine how difficult it must be when one gets attached, you know, working with a pet on a daily basis, and then they're put on the red list. So, you know, having an avenue, a place for them to go and live their best life must be huge as, you know, our country is facing so many mental health challenges as well.
Absolutely. And I mean, I have the utmost respect for workers of all shelters, including those at high kill shelters, because they go into work every day supporting those dogs and loving those dogs and providing care for those dogs. And they are faced with really difficult decisions based on situations that they're trying to help. They're trying to help those circumstances. They're doing their best. And yet they're still, unfortunately, faced with overpopulation crises and red lists and euthanizing dogs. And so absolutely, there's a massive mental health component. And I think that it's really important to see that for what it is and to talk about it and to support those shelter workers in all aspects of what they do.
So do you have, in a nutshell, any advice that you would give to those who love animals and perhaps want to go into this type of advocacy and work with special needs animals, whether it's on an individual basis or an organization?
Absolutely. And I think it's as simple as assume ability. Assume the ability in yourself to do it. Assume the ability in the animal to do things that you may otherwise place limits on them for. Assume the ability of the public to step up and to want to learn. And I think if you carry that through as somebody who's wanting to get involved, you will get really far.
Christina, as we're wrapping up, can you maybe share one of your favorite success stories?
Absolutely. I have so many, but
that you do
favorite, and it involves Forgiven and it involves our partnership. And I really think it speaks to a lot of the core things that we've touched on today, is a little guy named Sully. And so Lee, I'll let you start with how Sully came into care, cause that actually started on your end. And then we can talk about all of the things that happened with that little guy.
First, I would say Sully has my heart. So as soon as you brought him up, I had to like be like, oh, Sully, Sully. So Sully was, I love Sully so much. Okay, so Sully was he's a little Chihuahua. Well, he's mixed. So he's Chihuahua and what, Christine? I can't remember now.
Jack Russell Terrier.
Jack Russell and Chihuahua. Yeah. So adorable little tiny dog that came in. Hind legs were paralyzed. He did not have use of them. He was also incontinent when we were reached out about him. His story was that they're not really sure what happened with his back, but he was with his family and they came home one day and he was no longer using his hind legs. The family did do everything they could for his care, but it was primarily his dad was his primary caregiver. Unfortunately, last year, his dad was in a motorcycle accident that ended his life. So Sully was still with his family, but without his primary caregiver. And it was too much, I think, for his mom to kind of have to mourn what she had lost, also take on Sully. So little Sully ended up at the vet boarding, and he was there for over a month before we found out about him. I've mentioned already that we're brick and mortar, so a lot of times we don't take on dogs that are incontinent just because we're not here all the time. So last thing we want is a dog sitting there having to, you know, hold it when they need to use the restroom. So Sully was one of those cases where I reached out to Christina and it was like, I've been told about this dog. It's not something that I can necessarily take on long term because he is incontinent, but I would be more than willing, you know, to help with him until we can get him to you, because I really think that, you know, he could use our support. And that's what we did. We got him here. I started coming up here every single night to make sure that I could express his bladder and do all that stuff for him. Really cool thing about Sully is he just needed a little bit of time and somebody paying attention to him. And he actually regained the ability to use the bathroom on his own, which was like a really cool thing that we were excited to see here. Yeah, very cool. We were very excited for him. We also got him in a new wheelchair, like an actual wheelchair that fit him. So he was able to rip and run and, you know, actually get some exercise. And we had him for what, 3 weeks, something like that. And then got him up to Canada with Christina. And then she had him for a couple more weeks. And now he's in his forever home with a brand new caregiver that is completely dedicated to him.
Yeah, he did amazing. So like Lee mentioned, you know, he did the initial rehab side and really just getting moving down there at Forgiven. And with that, we saw, you know, his little back legs started to kick and go as he went. And not enough to walk on, but definitely enough to see movement in. And that continence came back. And, you know, we kind of celebrated. Lee called me one day and said, Sully went to the bathroom on his pee pad. So we just had that little moment of like, yay, it's happening. And so he just needed a chance to be able to get around. And then, his strength gained, his endurance gained as he was in his cart and he came up here. And we did some very kind of a lot of just informal rehab, right? Some very basic stuff. Hopped him up on the treadmill a couple of times here and had those legs going. And then he ended up going to one of our Snarl alumni families who had actually adopted a disabled cat with Manx syndrome from us, who is now Sully's sister. And so they're living in the Ottawa area in Canada. And he is just thriving. He's doing so well. We get photo updates. We get texts. It is just like the best combination for that whole family. So
I love this story so much.
Yeah, it's a great story.
So do you have any long-term goals that you would like to share with our audience? I know when we were talking prior to this recording, Christina, you mentioned the Kong campaign that both you and Lee are involved in. Love to hear about that too.
Yeah, so that's been a really exciting part of the last few months. So Kong invited Lee and I both out to Golden, Colorado to tour their facility and talk about a partnership that we're going to be working on with them for Kong Day, which is coming up in August. And that is that all dogs deserve to play. And so it's really an ode to all abilities, all ages, particularly dogs with disabilities, and that they deserve to play in some of those adaptations, some of just the great successes that come along with all pups. And so we're going to be working on that with them. There's some things going on in the background. We had an incredible time touring their facility and just talking about kind of our missions and what we're doing. And it's just a great combination of everything. So we're definitely looking forward to that this year. And then, I mean, long-term goals, we could go on forever about long-term goals, right? It's always, which one? And I think that at the core of it, it's really like more dogs, more advocacy, more impact, getting more people involved, getting more dogs home. Our partnership, has been a great piece of that and kind of moving towards that. We've got some things on the works for the next year. I think we really want to get involved in the community, and helping that out and just kind of going from there.
And just again, as a reminder, because it kind of came out of nowhere, Kong, K-O-N-G, that's the, we see it everywhere in all the pet stores and online and such. So, you know, check them out too. Do either of you know how many similar organizations there are in the U.S. and Canada? Is it, you know, just a handful that are taking on this work, or are there too many to count at this point? I have no idea of special needs rescues.
And this may not be the answer that you're expecting, Chris, but it is my honest answer. And I think every rescue is involved in having disabled dogs. And I think that that is true when healthy dogs are adopted out, or typical able-bodied dogs are adopted out, and something happens and that dog acquires mm-hmm. a disability, right? Yep. Or acquires mm-hmm. an illness, and that animal then comes back into care. And your reputable rescues are taking those dogs back, or dogs are needing amputations, or they're blind, or they're deaf, or just the age-related changes that we see. So I think every rescue, in a way, is associated. But I understand the question in the terms of disability-centered rescues, right? How many of them are there? There's numerous, and I think it really depends on what you're looking for. There are breed-specific rescues for French bulldogs that see a number of IBDD cases, right? There are German Shepherd rescues that see a ton of DM, and they're kind of happy to support that in that way. There are rescues for blind dogs or deaf dogs or double merle dogs that are across the country. We are some of the bigger rescues that are supporting all disabilities, right? There are fewer that are just kind of open arms to all disabilities and don't have a specialization. Especially on the Canadian side, there are fewer for sure, but there are numerous out there, and there's some great resources that if, you know, you're looking for a rescue in your area that might support a certain population, whether you're listening as an owner with a potentially disabled dog, or you're looking at getting one, or whether you're somebody who has a client that is a disabled dog, that there is lots of resources out there and different blogs and whatnot that actually profile a lot of those rescues. So I encourage you to just search for it, because whatever you're looking for is probably out there.
I love that answer. All disabilities, all breeds, and multiple species. So perfect.
Christina, any last thoughts or pearls of wisdom before we close the show?
Oh, the wisdom. My goodness, Kathy, you're putting me on the...
That sounds like Lori.
Pearls of wisdom. That's what Lori went. She's like, oh my gosh.
Oh my goodness, the wisdom panel. No, you know what? Honestly, I think it's just so great. I think communication is the most important thing. I think the more that we talk about things that make people uncomfortable, and nothing makes people uncomfortable more than the unknown, or wanting to talk about the unknown wrong, kind of in quotations, I think that the more that it just becomes comfortable. So I encourage people to chat. I encourage people to ask questions, to reach out to myself, to reach out to Lee with any questions that they might have about our organizations, or any questions they have about the animals that we have in care. And I'm just really grateful for you guys letting us come on the pod today and having the conversation with us.
Christina, just give our audience your information where they can contact you. And then Lee, could you also just one more time repeat where people can find you?
Yeah, so you can find the Special Needs Animal Rescue League at Snarl Rescue on all socials, or on our website at www.snarlrescue.ca.
Thank you.
Yeah, and for Forgiven, you can find us on all social media platforms under Forgiven. And then our website is forgiven.org.
Well, thank you both for what you do. Chris and I are so passionate about spreading the word about animals that have physical impairments, sensory impairments, or medical complexity. And we think that all animals' lives have value. And so we thank you very much.
Thanks again for having us. It's been wonderful.
Thank you, Christina and Lee.
Yeah, thank you.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed our show.
Follow us on social media at Petability Podcast.
And please check out our affiliates and sponsors.
Simply go to the show notes for information and links.
Thank you, and tune in next time.